صلی علی رسول کریم. There's a lengthy discussion about what takes precedence, what comes first, learning and education, or islah and tarbiyat. So those that say that learning and education comes first and islah and tarbiyat comes later, they quote the verse, اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق. Read in the name of your Rabb who has created man. From a clot. So they say that this was the first verse to be revealed. Hence, we understand that the first thing that is required is learning and reading. And there are others that say that the first thing in a person's life is tarbiyat islah, correction of the heart and of the mind. The mind needs to be corrected and the heart has to be corrected. And they say that in Bukhari Sharif, the first or the second hadith that is reported in Bukhari Sharif is وَحُبِّبَ إِلَيَّ الْخَلَأُ. Seclusion was made very dear to me. Obviously, the seclusion was made dear to Hazrat Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam by Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, and that he could remember Allah Ta'ala in seclusion uninterrupted. What we say zikr, and what we say that the magnificence and the greatness, the glory of Allah Ta'ala should settle in the heart. So this came even before Iqra. And at times, the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam would spend approximately a month, 3 weeks, up to 4 weeks in total seclusion. For some times, I should think about this, that why is seclusion so important? Why is the rectification and the correction of the heart and the mind more important according to this hadith, حُبِّبَ إِلَيَّ الْخَلَوْ? So the answer is quite simple, straightforward. If the mind is right, then you will see right. But if the mind is off, is corrupt, then you will see wrong. One friend of mine was traveling back, returning from America. Next to him was an Arab professor. Arab, pure Arab, good lineage. And he was returning in Jamaat. In Jamaat, they tell you, don't get into a conversation, don't get into an argument, just talk about the positives. So he was an American airliner, and he's returning. Here, that Arab called for a meal with steak. Now, on the Jamaat side, he's restricted, he can't say anything. But he can see the person eating haram. Now, what does he do? Anyway, he went in circles, a little bit round and round, and he got to the topic eventually, that this, you're eating this, and what's the situation here? So he says, see, the Quran Sharif says, قُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Eat on that food, you know, eat from that food on which the name of Allah Ta'ala has been taken. So see, I said, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, and then I'm eating. See that? So, if you want to take out something incorrect, you can take out. Mind is corrupt. Then from the right things, you will take out wrong. That is, the mind is not right. So therefore, this takes precedence. Get the mind right. Get the heart right. Get the intentions right. Once that is right, then you will see right, you will understand right, you will be able to analyze right. If that is not right, then the most intelligent person, he can't get the thing right. Mind is corrupt. There is some type of confusion in the mind, or the mind is preconceived, and from the preconception, according to the preconception, he's analyzing, and he's reasoning, and he's looking at things. So therefore, to get the mind right, what we say, get the niyat right, get the intention right. Strangely, yesterday, I was looking to the Malfuzat of Hazrat Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, and he says that jis qadar islah ki zarurat hai, us qadar ilm ki zarurat nahi hai. The level of islah, the need of islah is far in excess for the need of ilm. The need of self-reformation is far greater, is far more important than the need for just educating yourself. Then he says that every Sahabi was not a scholar and a researcher. You cannot say that every Sahabi was a scholar, he was a scientist. You cannot say that. You cannot say that he was a specialist in hadith. Every Sahabi wasn't like that. But with all that, Rasulullah declared that every Sahabi is a guide. Every Sahabi. So what was the distinguishing quality in the Sahaba-i-Kiram that made them guides? بِأَيِّمْ اِقْتَدَيْتُمْ اِهْتَدَيْتُمْ What was it? It was that association with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Again, the hearts were right. Once the hearts were right, then they could reason right, they could see things right, and everything fell in place. But the heart is not right, then how can things ever fall in place? Last night I had to advise some ulama, you know. So it was something pertaining to inheritance, etc. And one alim says, no, you know what? I made istikhara about this thing here, and this is the route we're supposed to be taking. So I heard him out, all right. So after he said whatever he needed to say, then I asked, Mawlana, do you know what is the meaning of istikhara? And where istikhara is done? He says, now you're asking Allah Ta'ala's help, but where istikhara is done? Istikhara is not done for a faraz. Istikhara is not done for a sunnat. It's not done for a wajib. We have to perform our maghrib namaz. Do we make istikhara? Must I read that maghrib namaz or not? So when a thing is wajib or farz, you don't need to make istikhara for that. Then you'll make dua that whatever you are doing, Allah Ta'ala puts it, make accepts it. But to make istikhara, whether I must do it, I must do this or I must do that, that's not the occasion for istikhara. You understand? See? So with all the knowledge, but yet the knowledge is not a guarantee that you'll go right. So Mawlana says thereafter that they will associate with us. They will associate with Mashayikh, Ulama, Busukhana Deen, Awliya. Then what will happen? After, over a period of time, they will have a familiarity with us. Hamare saath uns ho jayega. Manus ho jayenge. There will be a level of familiarity. They will become familiar. And with that familiarity, what will happen is they'll become compatible to deen and deeni teachings, deeni values, they'll become compatible. Then for their hearts to accept will be very easy. See, the announcement for the prohibition of wine came. And for the Sahaba-i-Kiram to destroy those barrels was simple. There were several Sahaba-i-Kiram that were importing. And the imports had just reached the gates of Medina Munawara. And here they heard the announcement that this is haram. For them to go and break those barrels was nothing. Their livelihood depended on this. Millions of rands, millions. And for them in one stroke to destroy it was simple. Hearts were right. To accept the command of Allah Ta'ala is easy. You are a person working for you, right? He's doing all the work, coming from 8 to late, doing everything. And this other person that's working for you also, he's not so intelligent, he's making mistakes, etc. He's doing the work. But the person that is coming from 8 to late, doing all the work very efficiently, very intelligent, he wants to see all the loose ends in your business. He wants to see your clientele list, he wants to see that. He wants to see where you're sourcing your stuff from, how you're marketing your product. He wants to see all these things there, and you get to know after some time, that he's opened a shop in the next end of the town, and he wants to move all your clientele there. What will happen? Will you keep him on? So his intention is corrupt. After that corrupt intention, he's working for you. You don't want to see him. This person that is a little bit weak, is broken down, you don't mind keeping him. Another man is broken down, but his heart is good, he's doing the work, making mistakes here and there, but he's doing the work. One alim had gone to some Maulana Murtaza Hussain, Naqshbandi Sheikh, for his Islah, Reformation, correction, and to take bayat. So the Sheikh tells him, as it is the tartib and the system of the Naqshbandi Mushaik, many of them, go and make istikhara. So he came after 4 or 5 hours, and he says, no, I'm confirmed that I must take bayat at your hands. Did you make the istikhara? Yes. Yes, in 5 hours you made the istikhara? Yes. Very strange. People take up to 5 to 7 days to make istikhara, and you got it right, got it moving in 7 days, in 5 days. What happened? You got it right in 5 hours. He says, I went in seclusion, and I began to reason. You see, every human being has got two forces, the right force and the wrong force. And the hadith says it also, every person has a qareen, a shaitan, and he's got an angel. So that qareen, that shaitan, will turn you towards the wrong. Inna nafsa la ammaratun bisu, violently commanding you towards wrong, right? And there is an angel that's also trying to guide you. Right? So every human being has got it. So now, I went into seclusion, I went and reasoned and discussed the whole thing with myself. So as I went into seclusion, now my nafs is saying, when I explain the nafs, you know what, I need to take bayat. So the nafs is saying, lekin to phir to tum band jaoge. You'll be tied up then, binded now. Doing something, you're intending something, you're embarking on something, and you have to ask. Now you're tied up. You lose your freedom. What's the good of you losing your freedom? You're born free. Now why must you tie yourself up? Who asked you to tie yourself up? So the nafs is coming. It's coming with force, vehemently, strongly. See how the nafs plays it. You're born free. Who asked you to tie yourself? Who asked you? Which hadith says that? So anyway, now I have to answer. I have to answer the nafs. The nafs is doing its part, and I have to get myself right. So I answered the nafs. Said, you know what? You will work hard, or usse khuda mil jayega. You'll work hard, you'll tie yourself, you'll keep yourself tied up, strapped up. You won't do a thing, you'll be subjected, right? But at the end, what you'll get Allah Ta'ala. So this keeping yourself tied up, keep yourself subjected, is not coming with a loss, it's coming with a gain. So the nafs had another thing to strike at me, another arrow to strike. And the nafs says, Ji, kya zamanat hai? What guarantee you got that you will definitely get Allah Ta'ala? So he answered the nafs in this way, lekin usko maalum ho jayega ke humne unko milne ki koshish ki. Allah Ta'ala will see that we tried to acquire him. We tried. And it is the guarantee of Allah Ta'ala, man arada al-akhirata wa sa'a laha sa'iha. Intention is right, and then you make an appropriate effort. Allah Pak says, kana sa'yu mashkura, your effort is well appreciated, in other words, it's accepted. So at least he will know that we tried. If we reached or we didn't reach, that's secondary. But the fact that we tried to come to him, so he'll look at us and look at us favorably. Now this nafs is a very delicate thing, very discreet thing, right? And it's very treacherous, it's extremely treacherous. So discreetly it can work. Any strong person also, it can just drop him off. One great sheikh, he preferred living in a small dwelling, small place, you know, like out of the town, small place. Not many people, so he preferred living in a small village. So they told him, you know, Hazrat, you are living here, such knowledge you have got, such expertise you got, you know the path to Allah Ta'ala, you can link up people to Allah Ta'ala. But then you're living here in a small little village, you know. You come to town, there's so many opportunities you'll get. You'll connect people to Allah Ta'ala. So much of good work you can do. So his answer was, there's no doubt that I'll get a lot of opportunities in a built-up area. In a built-up area, right? But he says, when the mud is thick, then even an elephant can slip. When the mud is thick, so there's so much of attraction, so much, that that attraction gets to you. And then to be able to distinguish right from wrong becomes extremely difficult. So just leave me where I am. I'm quite safe here. People know about me. They want, they'll come at their own leisure, at their own time. They will come. But now I go there and I risk myself. Then it's not worth the while. So this getting the heart right, getting the mind right. Some 10 years back, one Sheikh Uladiz came to me. So he says, Mulana, you know what? I see some people that are leading hadith, you know, from the articles, etc. You can make out that they are great experts. But then their books are not so popular. Very few people are taken to them. And then there are some that are not so great. They are great, but not that great. But their books are very popular. Now, how do you answer that? So I explained to him, see, that popularity is not the criterion for success. Then what is it? I said, see, Muslim Sharif has got a report, has got a hadith, which says that Rasulullah had seen a Nabi, right? And he saw that Nabi with a huge, massive following, right? And then, again, Nabi had seen, when Nabiyu walaysa ma'ahu ahad, and he's seen another Nabi, but he's got no following. So I asked him now, that Nabi that has got no following, is he anyway less successful? Can you say that? No. Why? He tried. He did everything that was humanly possible to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He did whatever he was commissioned. So he's definitely going to get through. Whether he's got the crowd or he doesn't have the crowd, he's definitely going to get through. So the idea in any work is to see that are we in line? Are we conforming to that way, to that system that Allah Ta'ala wants? The crowds, etc., the supporters, etc., will come. That we don't have to worry about. But yes, are we in line or not in line? And then we need to be in line in three levels. One is in the mind and the heart. That means the niyat must be right, intention must be right. Then the tongue must be right. And then the actions must also be supporting what we are talking about and what we intend in. So the first thing is the mind gets right. In the time of Umar radiallahu anhu, one army was dispatched to come to Alexandria. Alexandria in that zamana, in that age, was like a trade port, like how you have Dubai today, you know, it's a trade port. So as they reached there, they saw the wealth, the gold, the silver, and it blew their hearts out. So now they encountering that army and they see they can't just penetrate the fort, trying this way, the other way, but they can't just get any access. So they wrote up with Umar radiallahu anhu, who was the Khalifa at that time, that we held this siege against the fort, but we're not just getting any type of access. So we need some reinforcements. But Umar radiallahu anhu sent a reply, says, see, I'm not going to send anything back to you. But you people correct yourselves. That's the far sight. That's the sight of Umar radiallahu anhu. You correct yourself. And then you encounter that army. Then you tell me. So the next day was Friday. Friday normally there's no activity. So they called all the army and said, see, there's something wrong here. Some actions is not right or some intention is not right. Get that right. Get the action right. Get the intention right. So when he assembled them, they came to the conclusion that our intentions were right initially. We came in. But as we saw the wealth here, and our eyes just popped out. Now, from the cause of Allah Ta'ala, it changed to the cause of materialism. So the help of Allah Ta'ala has shifted. So what we need to do is correct our intentions and then encounter. And in just one day, they just mowed them down. One day. It was just the need of correcting that intention. But how important? As Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi says often, used to say often, that aadmi apne aap ko be kusoor na samjhe. No person must think that I am faultless. We have also got. We'll say, no, he did a wrong, and because of him, this thing is happening, and because of that person. But, or tumhara, koi kusur hai nahi. You're talking about the whole world, but within you, is there a fault? Do you have a fault also? Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu, he sent one jamaat, and they're not just getting through. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, afdalul bashari bittahqiqi ba'd al-anbiya, Abu Bakr al-Siddiq, the best person after all the anbiya, he says, Abu Bakr. Now he says that this is my fault, that you're not getting through anywhere, you're not making any progress, it's my fault. Because kufr cannot stand before iman. Kufr cannot stand before iman. And today kufr is standing before iman, it's because of my weakness. I need to make tawbah. See that? See how they're thinking? That there is a fault within them. They're not seeing the fault within that person, but the fault within myself. There's something wrong here in myself, and I need to correct myself. You see these mistakes that we make. Sometimes we overlook them. We don't treat them seriously. Junaid Baghdadi, rahmatullahi, is moving with a jamaat of his followers, right? And one youngster, he sees a Christian lad, extremely handsome. So, impressed with the looks and all that, so he says to the Junaid rahmatullah alayh, will Allah ta'ala put such a beautiful face into the fire? He's Christian, obviously, he can't get into Jannah. So he says, will Allah ta'ala put such a beautiful face into the fire? So the Junaid asked him, but did you admire him? He said, yes, I admired him. So the Junaid says, rahmatullah, phir uska khamyaza bhugatna parega. Then you'll suffer the consequence. Exactly 40 years after that, he forgot the Quran Sharif from cover to cover. Absolutely. What he knew, and the entire Quran Sharif is deleted from his mind. But you see what happens. These mistakes that we make, we don't reflect over them. We don't ask Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness. We don't think that there's going to be anything that's going to come and bite us. We don't think. No, that person he is the problem. He is the spokesman in the works. He is the problem. I am right. See this thinking and the thinking of the awliya of the past. In around 1940 or so, there were major riots in Sahanpur Madrasa, Mazahir al-Ulum. So, the Shaykh Ramatullah, we know, was a Qutb of the time, right? So he says, I think that this entire problem that is in the Madrasa is because of my weakness. And he says, I think how it happened, is when it started off, just started off, you know, at the beginning, and you couldn't see much of it, at that time it came out of my tongue. The people that are involved in this are not my boys, not the boys that I teach. Because I've been talking to them about Islam from the beginning. Those boys, the final year boys, they can't be involved in this. So this jumla, this sentence, Allah must have not loved it. Because there was some level of self-admiration in this. Not mine, not my people. Like when there's a fight between two children, then each parent wants to say that my son is right, my child is right, can never be wrong. So the Shaykh Rahmatullah, as high as he is, but he says that this one sentence of mine was not right, and this could have erupted into this problem here. That Khalid ibn Walid radiallahu anhu, in his zamana, and he's going for that Yamama, right? Ghazwa Yamama. And they can't just progress. They can't just make any progress. So, they can't make the progress. So now he's wondering what happened. Wherever we are encountering any army, any opposition, and we just wipe them out. Here it's a small little army and we can't just wipe them out. Then he says, no, it's my fault. Because when we saw that army, at first, the first encounter, it just slipped out of my tongue that these people here, we'll just mow them around in minutes, we'll finish them up. And we saw many of these type of people and we'll wipe them out. And then he says, wal bala'u mu'allakum bil mantiq. See, this afat, this musibat, calamities, they are connected to the tongue. Something that came out of your tongue, you didn't even realize what's the wrong in it, but you blurted something out. Now, this calamities that are coming is because of what you had said, what you blurted out. Now, correct yourself. See how these people, how the past, Sahaba-i-Kiram, the righteous, the Tabi'een, Awliya-i-Kiram, how they reasoned, how they looked at situations. And Imam Malik rahmatullah says that لَا يُسْلِحَ آخِرُ هَذِهِ الْأُمَّةِ إِلَّا بِمَا صَلُحَتْ بِهِ أَوَّلُهَا. If you want progress, then you will have to follow the ways of the Akabir. You want to progress, then you will have to follow the way of your predecessors, pious. You move away from them, then you're gone. Then you don't have anything to hold on, nothing, no handhold, nothing to hold on. Then you are just like a rudderless boat, you know, moving from this side, that side, one end to the other end, just moving any direction in every direction. So the first thing that is required in all of us, not for any individual, any person, get this right, get the heart, get the mind right. The mind is right, the heart is right, slowly you'll fall in line. But obviously this has to be done under some type of supervision. You go and do things yourself, and then you make accidents. So, but I was trying, but did you try under supervision or on your own? It's a very, very delicate thing, right? Very discreet thing, very delicate thing. Use your mind, and your mind can slip, can take you off. One person, the Imam Sahib had perceived some type of a foul smell in a masjid. So he's thinking to himself, but you know, in a masjid you don't get a foul smell. What happened now? Today I'm getting a foul smell in the masjid. So he looked in one direction, he saw that the smell was coming from that direction. So anyway, he went in that direction, he saw a person, and he saw that the smell was coming from that person. So he says, I'm getting some type of a foul smell from you. What happened? He said, you know what? I am suppressing my nafs. Nafs is the worst thing, right? So I'm trying to suppress and I'm trying to control my nafs. So, but how are you doing it? He says, my nafs is craving for a fragrance, right? And what I did was that I took a cotton wool and I put some cat filth in that and I got it stuck into my ear. So the Imam Sahib asked him, "Bhai, and for how long you've been doing this? For 25 years. Go and repeat your 25-year namaz." See that? He's trying to do the right, but unsupervised. You're trying for the right, but unsupervised. And what happens? And this is not something that is that can apply just to a jahil. It can happen to an alim as well. A learned person as well. And he's doing things unsupervised, right? When he's doing things unsupervised, then shaitan can deceive him in one or the other way, some way or the other he can deceive him. Because you're doing it, and you're doing it unsupervised. You don't realize. One saintly person is made about 50 hajjs. So one youngster saw that this is a saintly person, let me accompany him. Let me accompany him. So he accompanied him, and one day this youngster hears a voice that is coming to this old person that's made 50 hajj. He says, that voice is saying, do as you please and you are a jahannami. So the youngster tells the sheikh, you know what, you're trying so hard, 50 years you made pedal hajj, and you're getting this voice, what is the need for you to struggle like this? What is the need for you to struggle and strive? Enjoy yourself, be comfortable, relax. But you're struggling like this, what's the need? So the sheikh says that if there was another door that could accept me, I would have definitely referred to that door. But it's just one door, the door of Allah Ta'ala. There's no other door. I'll try and try. And I may die in the process, but I will go on trying. As he said this, then the divine voice came in. Qubulast garche hunarat nest ke jusma digar nest. He says, we have accepted you. Because your conviction is there's no other person that can accept but us. Although you don't have the qualification for acceptance, although you're not eligible for acceptance, but we accepted you. Hazrat Imam Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, to relate the story here, he says this, you know, this part here, Karachya Hunaratnes, though you're not eligible for acceptance, but we have pushed you in. That was like an antidote for self-admiration. And I'm doing so much, I'm chucked in now, I did so much, so Allah Ta'ala must accept me. Yes, you have the hope. But that doesn't mean that we rule out the element of fear. There may be something that's hidden, discreet, concealed within us that we can't perceive. So it's how we look at things, how we perceive, how we look at things. And if our niyat is right, our intentions are right, Allah Ta'ala will make things happen. One person is about 29, 28, and it's not just getting married. So they ask him, but you marriageable age, and definitely people will accept you. Some parents have already approached you for their daughters, but you're just rejecting. So he says, you see what? I'm looking for a woman who can give me a child, who can conquer Baytul Muqaddas. This is now in the 7th century, you know, when it was overtaken by Christians. So a child, I'm looking for a woman that can give me a child that can conquer Baytul Muqaddas, number one. And number two, she can lead me by my hand, she can hold me by my hand and escort me to Jannat. I'm looking for that type of a woman. In the meanwhile, there's a woman on the other end, and they approach her, but why don't you get married? So she said the same thing. I'm looking for a man who can give me a child that can conquer Baytul Muqaddas and can hold me by my hand and escort me to Jannat. And according to their intentions and their convictions, that wedlock produced Salahuddin Ayyubi Rahmatullah Alayh. See, intention and yaqeen Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. From the very beginning, inception, I want to do this. I want to do this. And Allah will make it happen. What's difficult for Allah? Is there anything difficult for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is your intention right? Is your yaqeen right? Your conviction and yaqeen Allah ta'ala right or not right? How many minutes left? 15 minutes, right? So this morning I have been giving some advice to some ulama-i-kiram. So I'll just share that. Whatever I've been discussing with them, let me just share it with you as well. So I recited the verse, وَلَا تُلْقُوا بِأَيْدِيكُمْ إِلَى التَّهْلُكَةِ. Do not let your hands be the cause of your destruction. وَلَا تُلْقُوا بِأَيْدِيكُمْ إِلَى التَّهْلُكَةِ. Do not let your hands bring your destruction. So what is the tafsir of this verse? أَنْفِقُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. Spend in the cause of Allah Ta'ala. And do not allow your hands to be the cause of your destruction. So Abu Ayyub Ansari radiyallahu anhu says that this verse is related to us, Ansari sahaba kiram. Because after some time, after the 7th, 8th Hijri, the Muslims had gained a lot of territory, a lot of conquest, a lot of futuhat had come in. So when we saw that wealth, that futuhat coming in, so we just declared, we just said that now Islam has made so much of conquest, it's progressing all the time. Now we can relax and attend to our businesses. You know, our businesses, our farms, let us attend to all these things here. Because we have done for Islam, and Islam has made a lot of progress. So now let us just attend to our businesses. So on that occasion, the verse was revealed, وَلَا تُلْقُوا بِأَيْدِيكُمْ إِلَى التَّهْلُكَةِ. Do not let your hands contribute to your destruction. Right. That means that working for Islam, striving for Islam, is your continuity. You will be sustained, you will continue as long as you work for Islam. And discontinuing your service for Islam is your discontinuity. You will be discontinued if you don't work for Islam. You work for Islam and that's your continuity. That's how you're going to be sustained, right? I mean, you see, work for Islam is in two levels. See, mehnat and the effort has to be in two levels. One is for the preservation, right? The preservation is done by madrasas, right? The word, correct pronunciation, correct meanings, correct application, that the madrasa will do that, will look after that. Look after the word, pronunciation, the meaning, and the application, right? And then they will pass it on to their students. Their students will pass it on, and so forth and so on, right? So one effort is to preserve. Right? One effort is to preserve. And the other effort is to propagate, to pass on. You can't only pass on without preserving, and you can't only preserve without propagating. Both efforts have to be working parallel to one another, right? If it is just preserving and no passing on, then it is incomplete. And if it is just passing on and no preserving the real substance, what are you going to be passing? You'll be passing wrong, you'll be messing up things. So you need to preserve it correctly, and then you need to pass it on correctly as well. So that's our continuity. We will be sustained through this. Minus this, we are discontinued. Class. End of the story. Then, in this whole exercise, we need to understand that every person cannot be an orator, right? Every person cannot be an orator. Allah blesses and chooses someone to be an orator, right? So, it doesn't mean that to be able to be of service to Islam, you are required to be an orator, no. Every person can serve the cause of Islam. Someone is an orator and someone is a guard, security, right? Someone is a cook. But I ask you that if that cook is not doing his job, or that person that is in charge of the potatoes, peeing the potatoes, right? If he doesn't do his job, can Mawla Katani do his job? You can't. There must be some cooperation. Mawla will do his job, he'll be orating, right? And that person will be doing his job. Intentions are right. Inshallah, the sawab will be equal. Intentions are right. Inshallah, his sawab and his sawab is identical. Because he's putting his heart and soul into it. He's putting his heart and soul into it. Each one according to his capacity. This person according to his capacity. That person according to his capacity. But both are working for the right cause. So Allah Ta'ala is too generous, right? It's beyond our understanding. Beyond our understanding. You know, you grouped up with the right people, effort is right, direction is right, then inshallah the sawab also will be identical, inshallah. Hazrat Mawla Qasim Nanuti Sahib Rahmatullah, the founder of Darul Deoband, someone was fanning him. Now, one is the hand fan that we normally use to see, that one hand fan. And there is another fan that's about 1.5 meter long. So as you are moving that fan, you'll get the whole crowd, right? So someone asked Hazrat Mawla Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh that people like to be in the company of the righteous. Right work, right company, they like to be there. And they like to be buried also amongst the righteous. So is that of any benefit, any significance that you like to be with them in this life, you like to be with them in that life, in the next life, is that of any significance? So Mawla asked the person, you fanning now, who you intending? He said, well, obviously you. But the effect of that fanning, is it felt by the others as well? They can also feel, because it's a 1.5 meter fan, so as he's moving it from one end to the other end, Mawlana only doesn't enjoy it, but the whole crowd enjoys it. So exactly the same, when the mercies and the blessings of Allah Ta'ala descends, then it descends upon all, not only on that particular person. Intention must be right, association must be right. Intention must be right. And the association is right, then every person works according to his capacity. You work according to your capacity, he works according to his capacity. Ibrahim bin Adham rahmatullahi, leader of the saints, right? Leader of the saints. You can't find a saint at that level. But his neighbor, there's an ordinary businessman, got about 10 children. Someone sees that that neighbor passed away. And that neighbor is posted to the position of Ibrahim bin Adham rahmatullahi alayh. He's surprised. Now, you're an ordinary businessman, you've got 10 children, all day you're working in the shop, and your position and your maqam is Ibrahim bin Adham rahmatullahi alayh. He says, yes. My intention, and wherever I had some time, I used to cry to Allah. Allah, you gave me wife, you gave me children. And you made it compulsory for me to take care of them. But my heart and my soul, and my time that is available, I use it for deen. So my heart is there, and I used to say to Allah Ta'ala that had I not had this type of responsibilities, I would have also dedicated myself as this man dedicated himself. I would have dedicated myself. So this intention and the zeal, this anxiety that I had in me, Allah Ta'ala looks at that as well. My intention is right, my direction is right, my cry is right, Allah Ta'ala looks at this as well. One thought that I'm sharing, and I've been sharing with anybody and everybody that comes across nowadays. I said, see, according to circumstance, then the reward of an action will just escalate. Say, for example, there is a need to revamp a masjid. But exactly around that time, there are some Muslims that are suffering from starvation. Ask you what is more important. Look after those that are starving. Even if they are non-Muslim, but look after them. That's going to be more rewarding than revamping this masjid. Isn't it? We all agree to that, right? Right. Now, in current times, what has happened is people have become disconnected to the masjid. I'm getting this type of reports coming in from affluent people that were religious, right? So their children are complaining. Everything is finished now. When it's finished, my father, my uncle, all that, they got beards, they know about deen. But they say, now what's the need to go to a masjid now, go through the difficulty and perform namaz? 5 people, we can just do our Jummah here at home. See, we are not looking at the far-reaching consequences of what we are doing. We're not thinking about it. You see, how we need to see it properly in perspective. Look at it in perspective, right? See, the Hindu, the Christian, the Buddhist, right, and the Jew, right? They disconnect from the deen. Absolutely disconnected. So they're free from all religious obligations, they're free. They do what they want, they sleep with whom they want, they eat what they want. They will say, no, I'm a Jew, I'm a Christian, right? Just for the statistics and just to maintain that family flavor. So they will say, I'm a Christian or whatever. But they got nothing of Christianity. The Hindu got nothing of Hinduism. You can celebrate Christmas, you can celebrate Diwali, everything you can celebrate. So they're not committed to anything. They're free. By name, they are Christian or Hindu. But now where this thing started off from? It started off from this point where they disconnected themselves from the church or from the temple. You know, our masjid that we have here in Spingo Beach. Originally it was built by Mr. Ambrose, right? So one day he came complaining. He says, you know what? We put up the temple, right? And we smuggled the boots into the temple also, from India and wherever. Expensive boots we had, we brought it somehow, smuggled it somehow, one way or the other, we brought it here. Now comes a big occasion, like we have a big night, they have a big occasion, right? Now, the people that are so-called learned amongst us, they're not doing the prayer that night. Then what happens? We come there, we despondent, and then we leave. So the masjid is a central point. We don't realize what an impact the masjid has on the ordinary person, even the average person, we don't realize. Weekly he's hearing something about deen. Is keeping him charged to the next week. He says, do this, don't do this, look after your parents, look after orphans, etc., look after the poor. So something is going into his mind. And that is carrying him on for the next week. But now, do you realize, or do you understand, that there are many homes out there that haven't seen a masjid, or haven't performed Jummah namaz for 15 weeks, up to 17 weeks, they haven't seen. And there isn't that concern. in their minds they feel that they are justified. Because now everywhere the masjid is going to be a virus. It's going to be a virus, so we are justified in not going to the masjid. So this reasoning of theirs is shaitanic. Why do I say it's shaitanic? I say it's shaitanic because we had a case in one block, and I won't mention the name now, we had a case there. So Mulana is teaching, he's got about 80 boys from the flat, from the block, and 25, 30 children from the outside, maybe foreigners or whoever. So the chairman writes up to the Mulana that you see these children that are coming from the outside, they're carrying the virus, so please, from tomorrow, ask them not to come. So Mulana didn't pay attention to them for the first day. Second day, he says, see, from today, I'm sending you immediate effect. Now, these people must not be allowed here. Now, the Mulana got also ticked off. And he writes up to the person. He says, you know what? You see, you got two maids in your house. In this block here, there's 100 flats, and you got two maids. Many of the people here got 3, 2, 1, nearly everyone have got. And all of them living in similar conditions, they are coming and they're doing your laundry. Many of them are doing your preparation and cooking, right? All of them are looking into your bedroom, right? They are checking, cleaning, toilets, they are doing everything. They're living in the similar condition. Many of them are living in such conditions, 40 to 50 people are sharing one toilet. So they don't carry any virus. Right? They don't have any virus. Only those children that are reading the Quran Sharif have a virus. Those people that come to the masjid, they have a virus. So these people that are coming to your flat, you keep them, you look after them, you pay them, they carry no virus, right? Your wife is not making a noise, you're not making a noise. But these children that are coming from the outside, you are making a noise or your wife is making a noise. But your wife is not making a noise for all these workers that are coming in. They're living in similar conditions. So why is there no noise? Why is this discrepancy? Why? And for your information, I feel now that virus story and all that thing doesn't apply now. Because the government has ruled that in a taxi you can sit 100% shoulder to shoulder. So they must have made the research to make this type of an announcement that they can sit shoulder to shoulder in a taxi. They must have, because any government is the most responsible person, right? They are responsible, so they made the research. After they made the research, they made the announcement now, in the taxis you can go 100% shoulder to shoulder. So if it can be applicable, then why not applicable here? If it's applicable there, then why not applicable here? So therefore, looking at all this, you know, what can happen afterwards? I just explained now that Hindu was separated from his deen. That Christian is separated from his deen. So for them to sleep with anybody is easy. In a few years, they are fathering children, they're mothering children, right? Now the father is educated, mother is educated. Do you think that child has any direction? No direction. Now, in a few years after, what happens? You are parenting children that got absolutely no direction. But the way it started off, they were disconnected from their prayer places. When they were disconnected from this point here, right, they became free. When they became free, no bayan, nothing, absolutely. So no direction. When there is no direction, now they became free. He's going his way, he's going his way. The wife says, no, leave it to the children. The husband says, leave it to the children, whatever they decide. Those children that are born in that way are all illegitimate, harami children. So can there be any good in that? Now, the same can happen to us. We are not exception to this rule. We are not exception. We get disconnected from the masjid, then become free. Our behavior is free, our ways are free, our values are free. We sleep anywhere, eat anything, drink anything. And then what happens? In one generation, everything is lost. So I have come to that conclusion after giving it a deep thought, that the greatest reward nowadays, like I said, when it's a masjid, needs to be revamped, and people are starving, what do you say? That the reward is here. So I have come to that conclusion now, and I'm saying it very strongly. I've been making dua for this, but I'm saying it, and I'm saying it with a lot of conviction, that the greatest reward now is to reconnect people to the masjid. Reconnect people to the maktab. So they have some direction in their life. At least that coming generation is saved. If we pass on, at least we have a face to show Allah Ta'ala. We have a face to show His Rasulullah Paksam. We did something to save your deen. We weren't relaxed. We didn't feel complacent. We weren't complacent when we saw things going all mixed up. So the greatest reward is reconnecting. But please, for Allah Ta'ala's sake, without getting into a conversation, a debate, a dialogue, a discussion, or a fight. You know, most of us are Indians, right? An Indian is a businessman, right? All know it. And the businessman, what he does? He markets his product. Other person can say anything. He can say, no, Ferraris. No, no, why? Whatever you say, I'm marketing my Honda. Won't you say that? Whatever you say about the Ferrari, that's in its place. But this is my product. I am marketing this. So I'm not going to get into the debate. I'm going to get locked in. Because I know if I get locked up in the debate, I'll lose my business. So leave the debate and just get the person. And I say in whichever way, even if it is you have to give the person a dawah, give him a present, but just reconnect him to the masjid. At least he'll have a direction. At least he'll have deen. At least his generation to come, his progeny to come, will be on the right. Allah Ta'ala grant us all tawfiq.